And this is Mae Brussel. It's KAZU FM in Pacific Grove, California. This is broadcast number 643, April the 2nd. It's 1984. The years go so fast, you know, you have to take a look to see which year it is. At least for me, they do. It goes awfully fast. We begin the program with the review of what was happening last year. The year goes fast. I say that every week. I can't believe it. Last year in April, the first week in April, I was talking about James Earl Ray, the man who was charged with killing a Martin Luther King. And an article referred to various people that James Earl Ray said he knew. One was David Graver, G-R-A-I-V-E-R, who used the alias Raoul, R-A-O-U-L. And Randolph Irwin Rosenson, who later was convicted in New Orleans for illegal smuggling. Rosenson could be the link to Clyde Watts and General Walker, the controversial General Walker, and to the World Anti-Communist League. And David Graver was a fellow that left Argentine in an airplane that was supposed to have died in the plane, and people believe that he was alive, a counterintelligence gun runner or mafia dealer with hunks of money linked to the Vatican Bank and to the Otto von Bolschwing Network, the TCI, the computer company. Von Bolschwing was Adolf Eichmann's superior. The links of these names that James Earl Ray had could link, in fact, to those people who were behind the murder of Martin Luther King. I also talked about George Corcula, who was brought back to the United States. He's a partner in crime in CIA, in assassination teams and counterintelligence. Worked with Frank Turple and Edwin Wilson. Turple and Wilson are very quiet. Turple is out of this country. Wilson has been arrested and is in jail. In 1 year, I haven't seen anything about George Corcula. If you see anything, send me the articles. I certainly am not aware of them if they're around. I also talked about the laundry for DeLorean for his $17.6 million, the missing funds that have been diverted to unknown places. And I told you that the information I'd gotten was that this money went to Klaus Barbie, who put it in a Swiss bank. Now the DeLorean trial is going on, and today they're saying that narcotics at his hotel wasn't DeLorean's. It'll be interesting to see how they get him off, but I don't have any doubt that DeLorean will get off. I'd be very surprised if he got off. We were talking last year about Mehmet Maja and his links to Milan and to the drug smuggling and the arms traffic out of Milan. I've been talking about him. He's the fellow who's been charged, the gunman who shot John Paul II in 1981, in May of 81. And I'll update the Vatican story. There's more in the news today about the Vatican banks and maybe one of the reasons why the Pope was shot. Last year, I saw about how Reagan recalled his shooting and compared the wounds of James Brady, whose head was so badly damaged, and Thomas Delahanty and Secret Service man Timothy McCarthy, as against Ronald Reagan, who didn't know he was actually shot until he was in the car. He thought it was a broken rib. Larry Flint said that, well, in prison, he's still in North Carolina at Durham, that somebody there who had John Hinckley there, he was also incarcerated there, said that Hinckley made the remark that he was surprised that somebody substituted the wrong ammunition for him, that he was supposed to have one of these bullets that does this massive damage, the fragments, and that when he shot at Reagan, he didn't have that bullet in his gun. That would be consistent with what I was saying before, and I looked up the articles, and there were a lot of discrepancies in the way that the three men fell and the response of Ronald Reagan, and somebody talks about it in the federal prison in North Carolina, the Durham, North Carolina, Butner, on the fact that that Hinckley was surprised that he was supposed to have a different kind of ammunition and didn't. That statement would mean, of course, that, and many of us believe there were two gunmen, they could use silencers, and that two different kinds of bullets were administered. The men fell in different ways, and the direction, the trajectory, suggests there were different bullets. So last year I was talking about that, and since then I've learned from Larry Flint that this was the talk around Durham in the penitentiary. I also mentioned the grim plan of Argentina to order crematoriums from Florida. I haven't heard any more about that. That was a Jack Anderson story, a $15 million order four ovens to bury 400 people daily. And then there were the stories just a year ago of Edwin Wilson bragging about the CIA's responsibility in the Che Guevara murder, and Klaus Barbie had been arrested, and of course Klaus Barbie was part of the team of the CIA in focusing in on Che Guevara and killing him for the United States. There have been a lot of articles about the Reagan factor, the sleaze factor. The candidates are bringing it up a little bit. Mr. Mondale said he is, at this point, the master of deceit. Jesse Jackson said that Reagan is the master of deceit. Mondale's called the administration one of the tawdriest in modern history, and Mr. Gary Hart described it as one of the most marginally ethical in our lifetime. The point about Ronald Reagan, and I'll do more, and I did list some of the sleaze operations on a broadcast a few weeks ago, the point about Reagan is that he's no different than all the other candidates. The fact about Ronald Reagan is that he's the most dangerous, that he has us at the brink of war. He is deploying the missiles in Europe. He wants war. And the only reason to bring out the sleaze factor is to get him out on anything you can. Now, I was listing alphabetically all the different people that he has appointed that were removed from office. The people, and you've seen them in the papers recently, the people that he wanted to appoint that didn't make it, and those that left voluntarily that weren't charged, and some that are criminally indicted. I also have brought out, ever since Ronald Reagan had his inauguration ball, what I call every week the high society. Of course, that's my tongue in cheek, the high society. The real part about him is the Alfred Bloomingdale, Vicky Morgan scandals with the sadomasochism and the photos and the high government officials and their kinky sex going on for 10 years, and then putting Bloomingdale on the intelligence advisory board and using Vicky for sex and blackmail in her dual companionship with potentates from all over Europe and Bernie Cornfield. That's the sleazy side. And the inauguration I mentioned with Johnny Carson putting on the inaugural ball, his links to Robert Duran and Jack Catane and Henry Bushkin and the cocaine connections in the Cayman Islands, that's part of the sleaze of Ronald Reagan. Licio Gelli putting up money and coming to the inauguration, hiding now in South America, that is a sleaze factor. A man that worked with Franco, Mussolini, and Hitler, that's part of the sleaze, the high sleaze of Ronald Reagan. Paul Laxalt in the news stories in the Sacramento Bee this year, and in Las Vegas, the skimming money, the hotels, the debts of Paul Laxalt, who runs the GOP with the mafia, and goodness knows, extortion, blackmail, narcotics, etc. That's a sleaze factor. The David Miller, the son of Ronald Reagan and Nancy's attorney, they can't help these things, but here's their private attorney whose son rapes his mother. He's in love with his mother. Personal tragedies, but high society, that's their attorney, close to them, along with Vicky, super sleaze, and Frank Sinatra. His links to Sam Giancana, a new book coming out by Giancana's daughter, and his links always to organized crime and the exposés he and Carson putting on the inaugural parties. And then using Helene Von Damme as his secretary all these years, a woman who came into this country as part of an espionage operation under Adolf Eichmann's superior, Otto von Bolschwing, who conceived the ideas for Eichmann, and sending her as the ambassador to Vienna. When they talk about sleaze, I keep a list of sleaze, and then there's real sleaze. And you've heard me talk about these things. And every week when these candidates talk about these matters, I want to remind them there's even a sleazier part of Reagan. Not only the kinky sex and the personal problems of the people around him and the narcotics traffic, but the mafia and the killer teams and the Nazi connections that are so close. All you're seeing now are the little pimples of a sick body. And Reagan didn't bring all this in. The reason people are picking on him now is that he's got us to the brink of war. And if you want real sleaze, look at Jonathan Quitney's article in the Wall Street Journal today on Piper Aircraft. It was just April the 2nd this morning. Piper Aircraft intentionally destroyed large amounts of evidence pertaining to the safety of its airplane. Now, some of these people that are named, they polluted our water. Some polluted our air. These are airplane crashes, and it says most of the data on this particular law case of Piper was destroyed or hidden from the court. It dealt with a stability problem discussed in page one in the Wall Street Journal in December 15th of 1983. The Piper aircraft people had to conceal the data about their safety defects for 6.5 years, during which time J. Lynn Helms, L-Y-N-N, Helms, was chief executive of the company. After leaving Piper in 1980, after 6.5 years of deception, Helms was the president's head of Federal Aviation, a position he supervised for nation's aircraft safety. A man, 6.5 years of hiding evidence, destroying evidence, and intentionally destroying evidence of airplane crashes. Goodness knows how many died in those. And then he gets an appointment by the President of the United States. And the article says Mr. Helms resigned his FAA position this January after the Federal Transportation Department, the FBI, and two grand juries began to investigate his personal business. He subsequently filed for personal bankruptcy on unsecured loans of $38.4 million. That makes the Mises look like paupers. They're talking about a $15,000 problem. Here's the head of FAA, your safety, your airplanes, your lives, or people that you know on these airplanes, hiding evidence and lying about safety of planes for 6.5 years, then getting an appointment in a federal capacity of the airlines and owing $38.4 million of unsecured loans. Most of the loans were made by major banks after Mr. Helms was appointed federal administration, FAA administrator, and the federal government sources said that the unrepaid loans exceed $60 million. Okay, there's $60 million of unpaid loans, unrepaid loans. Mr. Helms conceded in a $1.3 billion lawsuit that he filed that he had business dealings that were fraudulent. This goes into forgery, doubles, et cetera, et cetera. That is what you call real sleaze. That was Ronald Reagan's head of FAA, and the American banks put that kind of money, unsecured loans, you're talking about $80 or $60 million. The Mises are just small potatoes, but those are the kind of people that are running our country and putting it in danger. One short item that isn't worth mentioning, but it's so disgusting. Christina DeLorean on television, all the papers having articles, how DeLorean found religion, how she asked Jesus to come and save his life and brought a Bible. He had Bibles before he was caught with the cocaine and was dealing with these sleazy people. He's been involved with them all of his career. His past career up to the time he was arrested was one record of sleazy operations that we've detailed on this broadcast. Now, there's a story in the Chronicle, how DeLorean found religion. I'll tell you how he found religion. He opened his eyes and found millions of dollars of cocaine in the room where he was, said, this is just like pure gold. And then he says, oh, Jesus. That's when he found religion, when he found the cocaine. You know, you can't have a religious person getting into all these problems because that's a contradiction. So as soon as they're arrested, like Charles Colson and these people, they've done dirty things all their lives, then they find Christ, because then Christ is supposed to be the inspiration. They see the light, and then the court goes along with it, and the people realize they've suffered enough. It really is a disgusting thing to use religion. If you use it before, you wouldn't be in that mess, maybe. And if you can't use it, don't use it as an out. The courts ought to throw that out, like those some cases of mental problems like Jack Ruby or Dan White. They're such hogwash. They're obvious conspiracies. Those mental frauds ought to be out, and the religious defense ought to be out. If I were on the jury, I would be furious that they abuse a thing as personal as religion to save their skin. And of course you get religious. You get religious when you're caught with a crime or you know you're going to die. I mean, the worst atheist in the world probably gets religious then, and the news media shouldn't keep pushing this. And speaking of religion, story that broke in most of the major papers today, going on to one of my favorite subjects, three or four of them were all in the news today. Prosecutor notifies the Vatican Bank of an inquiry, a Vatican Bank loan. In essence, the Italian government has now served notice that they want to arrest Archbishop Paul Marcinkus, the head of the Vatican Bank, Luigi Menini, M-E-N-N-I-N-I, a high official of the Vatican Bank, and Pellegrino de Strobel, D-E-S-T-R-O-B-E-L, three officials of the Vatican Bank. Now, it's interesting, the Vatican and members of the Vatican were immune from arrest in Italy until several months ago. And the laws were changed in Italy that they had to obey the laws that everybody else does. That's why I said there wouldn't be many priests on the street for a while when the law was changed. But after the billions of dollars, $22 billion that Licio Gelli sent to Argentina, their gas taxes and all, the bank collapsing and the intertwining of the Vatican with their personal money, they changed their laws, and now members of the church can be served papers. This has to do with an illegal loan that was made in 1972. The Vatican Bank, the Institute for Religious Works at the time, loaned $85 million to a Milan company called Italmobiliare, I-T-A-L-M-O-B-I-L-I-A-R-E, Italmobiliare. The Vatican loaned them $85 million. The catch was, this is what is irregular, they said, we'll give you the money. They live in Italy. We'll give you the money in Swiss francs, but you have to pay it back in Swiss francs. That was the agreement. So since 1972, the inflation of the Swiss franc went from $85 million to $192 million. And this company is the second largest insurance company in Italy. Now, the largest bank in Italy collapsed because of the Vatican, the involvement of Paul Marcinkus, who was under investigation with the Banco Ambrosiano in 1982. He's from Cicero, Illinois. I call him part of the Al Capone gang because of his links of certain attorneys and people to the original Capone gang and to Paul Marcinkus. He was warned about this investigation coming on, and he was served papers, but he wouldn't accept them at the time. They said that they wouldn't accept those papers, and Paul Marcinkus has been inside the Vatican with Pope John Paul II for 2 years. This is like John Paul Sartre's play, No Exit. They have to live with each other until they die, I guess. So now a member of this insurance compound, the Italmobiliare, has asked the Vatican to explain in the law courts the difference of $192 million. That's the fee now that's due. The Banco Ambrosiano was charged with working or vice versa with the Vatican, and the Vatican signed their names to loans in Panama dummy fronts, where the Vatican had an interest that they're trying to pay off a token of $250 million now. Paul Marcinkus was under investigation when Banco Ambrosiano collapsed, and he avoided being tapped for that. The Vatican is trying to pay, as I say, a little bit of that back. Mr. Manini, Luigo Manini, who's been charged today, the high official at the Vatican, was indicted 2 years ago, along with 25 others, for the collapse of Banca Privata. That was in 1974. That was a bank owned by Michael Sindona, referred to as God's banker, who was banking for Pope Paul VI and making investments. And that bank collapsed, and Mr. Manini was involved in that. Then Michael Sindona came to the United States and was involved with the Franklin National Bank, and $45 million went out of that, and he's serving time in jail. He's also wanted for murder in Italy in the case of an investigator being killed. And as I mentioned a few weeks ago, Sindona's co-partner, the hitman, William Arco, fell out of the ninth floor window of a jail in New York just conveniently a few weeks ago. So now the Vatican Bank can be served these papers. They've been involved in not only the Ambrosiano collapse, that largest bank in Italy, and the Banca Privata, the one that Sindona had, which had a fortune in it, but now the large Italmobiliare, which is the holding company from Milan, and they want an accounting of this money, and they have been served papers along with 20 other people. So the Vatican began using Michael Sindona, who had banks crushing around him, and Licio Gelli, whose investments collapsed, and they mingled their money not with the church and not with the brothers or the nuns or the priests, but into tangled webs of gun running, narcotics, hit teams, and so forth. And now it's getting more complicated because they can be served papers, and it'll be interesting to see what happens. I briefly want to mention that just this last December, I've referred to a visit I had by two men from the General Counting Office in Washington, D.C., regarding Fritz Kramer. They came to my house December the 10th as representatives from Chairman Peter Rodino's House Judiciary Committee. You can write this down if you want to write letters for me. Mr. Peter Rodino, Chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. The two men saw me, and I gave them information because I want to know if Fritz Kramer, who ran our Pentagon and is the instrumental man behind Henry Kissinger, and you see how he's emerging again to take total control of this government, is the same Fritz Kramer that was Hitler's top general. That's all I want to know, because one was a war criminal. And if it isn't that same person, I'll be satisfied. If it is, we have some accounting to do, and I want this Fritz Kramer to say under oath in Peter Rodino's committee that he's not the same person. I gave them pictures of each of the men side by side. So today I got a letter from one of the fellows that visited me, Mr. John R. Tipton, a senior evaluator. And he said, I want to thank you for meeting with Bob Glick and me on December the 10th. That Chairman Rodino is looking into the allegation of Nazi war criminals that came to this country and concealed their background. He said, to summarize our conversation, he gave 3 points. One, you are aware of only one case whereby a now alleged war criminal was used and aided in immigrating to another country. Two, you furnished us various news articles you had written, as well as copies of notes you had on your radio show. You discussed an individual now living in the United States whom you suspect of being an ex-high-level Nazi and convicted war criminal. Three, in your opinion, it would not be surprising that Nazi war criminals or collaborators have assisted in this country by U.S. intelligence. In closing, I wish to acknowledge your letter January 13th. I asked them what's happening, and thank you for your hospitality during our visit, and I wish you well in your present endeavors in a scenic location. If you have any questions or you want to clarify the above summary, write or call Bob or me. Well, you could better believe that by tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock, I'm going to have a letter out there. Why don't you mention Fritz Kramer? Why didn't you mention Henry Kissinger? What in this letter, if anybody ever saw this, would know what we were talking about? And has Mr. Rodino been notified that I want Fritz Kramer in Congress to say that he's not prisoner 33 at the Dachau trials? This Henry Kissinger is a disease that is going around the world wherever he touches. It's money for kill. And now he's on the Intelligence Advisory Board. He works his way up and worms his way. You can't sit on him or squash him. And it's very important that we know who this Kissinger is, because Fritz Kramer was the one who recruited him and took him around the various important places, from the Battle of Bulge to Oberammergau, and then to Harvard, and then into the State Department and be Secretary of State and head of the National Security. Now, in the book, in The Banks We Trust, I have the book and I've only read certain parts of it. And David Emery called me this week. He says, turn to page 73. And on 73 in that book, which I had not read yet, I'd read the Italian banking scandals of Vatican. I hadn't read the Nugent Hand part. There were my two favorite subjects, the Nugent Hand Bank of Australia, that's in the news today with Jack Anderson, and we'll go right into that, but also to Fritz Kramer. And that's very important, too, because, as I say, Jack Anderson is asking why today in the news the United States government has not acknowledged the fact of Nugent Hand Bank with our high military and so forth. He asked that question. And the answer is Fritz Kramer. Now, in the book, In Banks We Trust, which is getting a lot of notation and publicity, she says on page 73 that she talks about the Task Force 157 that worked with the CIA. It was controlled by the United States Office of Naval Research and was directly responsible to the strong-willed Secretary of State Henry Kissinger. Now, I've said Task Force 7 was behind the murder of Salvador Allende, Orlando Letelier. It was for, and I believe, John Lennon's hit team. I believe it is the cover for many hit teams around the world, among other things. And she has Henry Kissinger in this book. It said the task force gained notoriety when 21 of its former agents took the Navy to court to demand civil service benefits after the group was disbanded in 1977 because of an internal scandal Ed Wilson had on his desk. And his own staff at the task force Washington headquarters is credited with the operation's front name, Pierce Morgan. This was part of the link to Edwin Wilson. Now, the attorney that represented those 77 people is Bernard Fencerwald, who was James McCord's attorney and also the attorney for Mary Ann Paisley when John Paisley was murdered, and he was directly linked to Lee Harvey Oswald and to Navy intelligence, John Paisley with the Soviet desk and James Angleton. Fencerwald represents the task force members. He represents Mary Ann Paisley, and he headed the committee to investigate assassinations and also James McCord, who was part of these intrigues. This is the first time I've seen Henry Kissinger's name in this connection. Informed sources say that Task Force 157 used the Nugenhand Bank for covert Navy intelligence money, and the CIA used it to undermine Australia's Labor government, which is true. And, of course, in the book, In Banks We Trust by Penny Lanoue, it just came out. There's a lot of more information about the money scandals that I've been talking about, like the Nugenhand and the Vatican banks. Now, Jack Anderson today had a story. The Anderson story broke, and the Vatican Bank stories both broke just this morning, banking on drug traffic. And Jack Anderson says that the United States intelligence and the government refused to cooperate for 3 years. The Australians are investigating the Nugenhand Bank, founded by Frank Nugen. It collapsed in 1980. Now, that bank had between $500 million and $1 billion, and allegedly nobody came forward. They didn't want to be connected with this because this is the highest level of the Army, which would be Kissinger and Fritz Kramer, the Navy and the Admirals, which is Navy intelligence, and the international cocaine and heroin traffic, particularly from Southeast Asia, and then distributing over to the Middle East. It involves employees at Bechtel Corporation, which is Mr. Schultz and Caspar Weinberger. The Nugenhand Bank is a net of the Odessa. It's given a different name. Odessa was Adolf Hitler and Martin Bormann's umbrella organization for resurrecting the Fourth Reich. Now, this bank collapsed when Frank Nugen was murdered, and Jack Anderson repeated again. Many of you know the story. Maybe you don't. William Colby's name was on Frank Nugen's in his pocket when he died. He was an attorney for the bank. That's the head of our Phoenix program and Murder Incorporated from Southeast Asia, who became our CIA director. Retired Navy admirals such as Earl Yates, who was the bank president. Retired Army General Erie Koch. That's a good name, Erie Koch, C-O-C-K-E. Consulting firm in Washington, D.C. was part of the bank. CIA station chief, that was Bernie Houghton in Bangkok. And he was in Saudi Arabia, but the one in Bangkok and Thailand. And the documents were shredded. Many were shredded in Austria, but the Nugenhand drug traffic involved the Golden Triangle, Southeast Asia, with a branch in Thailand, in Chiang Mai, right near the Burma border, but in the same building as our Drug Enforcement Agency. The links of the banks, Jack Anderson wrote today, go to Edwin Wilson of the CIA, a gunrunner working for the Navy Secret Task Force 157. And, of course, I've said over and again that when George Bush was director of the CIA, he was the director of this same operation. They used shipping companies for espionage, and there were links to the CIA and to the high officials of our government. Now, in the San Francisco Chronicle, the Jack Anderson story ends with, the Australian investigators were rebuffed by every U.S. agency they approached for information. The big question is why? The answer to why is Henry Kissinger. That is the answer, because they're rolling him along to be the Führer. I believe this seriously. I think he's the biggest menace going, and that's why I keep pursuing the man behind him who's still alive, who shares the offices with Daniel Graham, who wants to reinforce the space stations and a lot of other former future acts of repression. They are not a good team. They're not good for this country, and we have to pursue them. Now, on other programs, on broadcast 605 and 639 recently, I referred to the CIA offices, the Nugenhand Bank office in Washington, D.C., of Edwin Wilson and Robert Keith Gray, who shared the offices. And then Robert Keith Gray went on to be co-chairman of Ronald Reagan's inaugural ball with the high society that I mentioned earlier, such as Jelly and Sinatra and Carson and the Bloomingdale, the great social class of Ronald Reagan, okay? Robert Gray, I've mentioned him, is working with Task Force 157. I've done other broadcasts on that. And going back to the broadcast 605, I talked about the interesting connections of Robert Keith Gray to William Casey and Mr. Edwin Meese, and the interesting memos of the Watergate, not the Watergate, the Cartergate papers that I've had on the air a few weeks ago and back as early as July of last year that were directed to Edwin Meese and to William Casey and Mr. Gray, having to do with stolen papers and even sex and compromising people to get information at the time of the elections, the use of Navy intelligence and Robert Gray, and then Gray's name surfaces on the memos of the Cartergate story that involved Edwin Meese. And when they try to cover that all up, it's going to come out again. William French Smith, of course, and the Justice Department tried to cover up the Cartergate, Reagan, the stealing of the papers to make Reagan president. But because of the Edwin Meese hearings, they can't cover it up, and it's going to be opened up, I hope. Now, I'll take a 1-minute break, and then we'll come back with some more of these scandals.